Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this. Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's W-I-X.com.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
Airstrikes appear to be working. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Gina Cervetti. It is Monday, August 11. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
U.S. missiles hitting terrorist positions in northern Iraq have forced a retreat by the group called the Islamic State. We'll be in Baghdad for the latest in just a moment.
Tensions are high in a suburb of St. Louis after an unarmed 18-year-old was fatally shot by police.
In sports, Rory McIlroy broke free from a logjam atop the leaderboard to capture the PGA Championship, his second major in a row.
And as another 72-hour ceasefire takes hold in Gaza, the Israeli military is facing questions about why it didn't react sooner to the Hamas terror tunnels.
There are questions being asked as to why Israel didn't fully understand this threat earlier and how the Islamist group Hamas was able to create a labyrinth of tunnels under Israel's feet without them knowing, essentially.
Wall Street Journal reporter Rory Jones joins us from Jerusalem about criticism of Israeli intel. He's here in about 10 minutes. There are early indications that 3 days of U.S. airstrikes in northern Iraq are having an effect on the terrorists who've overrun large portions of the region. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says he's constantly assessing where the U.S. can help.
This is a humanitarian issue of great consequence for all of the world. And I think great powers understand they have responsibilities in these areas.
He was in Australia speaking. Wall Street Journal reporter Matt Bradley in Baghdad, meanwhile, says the Islamist extremists have been forced to give up some territory they'd won from Kurdish forces. He joins us on the T-Mobile hotline. Matt, what are you hearing?
Well, for the first time since Islamist militants were able to take over large swaths of the country in mid-June, the Peshmerga, who are part of the Iraqi army, were actually able to reclaim some land that had been taken by the Islamist State. And it's no coincidence that this happened on the third day of U.S. airstrikes. So it seems that the U.S. airstrikes that were ordered by President Obama are actually starting to bear some fruit.
How significant are those gains, Matt?
The gains are not that significant. We're talking about two towns outside of the city of Erbil, which is the capital of Kurdistan. So while these two towns, which are Gwer and Mahdur, are somewhat strategically significant, and they go a long way toward beating back the Islamic State from taking the city of Erbil, which is a major, major city here in Iraq, it's not exactly a major military accomplishment. However, it is the first real gain of the Iraqi military since the Islamic State first started taking huge tracts of land on June 10th. So this should be a cause for some optimism.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Matt Bradley. He's on the line from Baghdad. So what about the fate of those religious refugees?
The fate of the Yazidis is still unknown, but this is a good step toward helping them. If the Iraqi military, and especially the Peshmerga in northern Kurdistan, are able to beat back some of the Islamic State troops, then it really increases the fortunes of some of these Yazidis. We're thinking about, you know, the United Nations says there are as many as 40,000 of them who are stranded on this mountaintop of Sinjar, outside of the city of Sinjar, near the Syrian border. They are starting to receive some of the aid packages and the water that the United States is airdropping onto the mountain of Sinjar. And it seems as though the United Nations is really trying to come up with a plan for evacuating them, hopefully through the Kurdish region of Syria, which isn't all that much more secure than Iraq, but is really getting there.
How much longer will these targeted airstrikes last?
Well, President Obama made it clear in his speech on Saturday that the airstrikes have no time limit, that there's no real plan for exactly when all of this is going to end. And that just really brings us back to some echoes of the kind of discussions we had during the nearly decade-long Iraq occupation. This is an intractable problem. The Islamic State is, in many ways, here to stay, and it will be up to the Iraqi government and the Peshmerga forces who are connected to the semi-autonomous region of Kurdistan to decide when they are going to get their act together and rout these Islamic militants from the battlefield. The United States has made it clear that they are only here in a support capacity, and they cannot fully reverse the tide of this war.
Thanks, Matt. Wall Street Journal reporter Matt Bradley from Baghdad. By the way, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is jumping on an opportunity to distance herself from President Obama should she decide to run for the White House in 2016. At a time when polls showed dwindling public confidence in Mr. Obama's foreign policy, Mrs. Clinton told The Atlantic that the Obama administration's failure to assist moderate rebels in Syria early in that country's uprising against President Bashar al-Assad has fueled the rise of Islamic militants who are now sweeping through northern Iraq. She also took a swipe at a phrase that the Obama administration uses to describe its foreign policy. You may have heard officials use the phrase, quote, "don't do stupid stuff." Mrs. Clinton says great nations need organizing principles, and "don't do stupid stuff" is not an organizing principle. It's 12 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
As the owner of a delivery company, I have to be in constant contact with my drivers, the warehouse, and my customers. Between scheduling appointments, using GPS, and tracking orders on our smartphones and tablets, we were going way over our data limit every month. That's why I switched to T-Mobile's Simple Choice for Business Plan. My company gets all the data we need without worrying about unpredictable overage charges. Switch to T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/business.
Limited time only, subject to change.
Good Monday morning. This portion of the program is brought to you by ProFlowers.com. Let the woman in your life know you appreciate all she does. You know, it's been 6 months since Valentine's Day, so she's due. And don't just get her a dozen, get her 18. That's right, 18 red roses plus a free vase for $19.99. This is the biggest sale on red roses of the year. Go to ProFlowers.com, click on the blue microphone in the top right corner, and use the code WSJ to get this amazing offer. And if that's not enough, you can upgrade to two dozen plus free chocolates and a premium vase for just $9.99 more. ProFlowers is quick, easy, and you pick your delivery date, and it's guaranteed. You can't beat the price or convenience. Here's the only way to get her this amazing deal. 18 red roses plus a free vase for $19.99. Go to ProFlowers.com, click on the microphone in the top right corner, and type in WSJ. That's ProFlowers.com, click on the microphone, and type in WSJ. Order today. This deal expires Friday at midnight. As Israel and Hamas observe another 72-hour ceasefire in Gaza, Israel is beginning to question why it appears to have underestimated the vast Hamas tunnel network. It's an underground system that Israel has worked hard to destroy over the past month. We take you now to Jerusalem and Wall Street Journal reporter Rory Jones, who's recently been inside one of these tunnels. Rory, what have you found?
In the wake of the ceasefire and the discovery of 32 tunnels, there are questions being asked as to why Israel didn't fully understand this threat earlier and why it didn't detect this threat earlier and how the Islamist group Hamas was able to create a labyrinth of tunnels under Israel's feet without them knowing, essentially. So those questions are now being asked by intelligence experts and former government and parliament employees, essentially.
All right, so 32 tunnels were detected and apparently destroyed by Israel. Any idea how many tunnels might remain?
I mean, Israel believes there could be some other tunnels, but it's not sure if there are other tunnels, and I mean, and if there are tunnels, how many there are. There's not really. It's not clear from what we can gather and what we've been told how many other tunnels there might be. That doesn't mean to say that Israel doesn't now know and has a better understanding now that it's had to deal head on with the tunnels. But from our understanding, it's not quite clear.
All right. And how are these things built? What went into that?
These weren't just soil structures that you crawled through. These were 5 feet high or thereabouts, about the width of a man, and they were reinforced with slabs of concrete. So they were reinforced on the sides by small slabs of concrete, and then there were actual concrete arches over the tunnels.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Rory Jones from Jerusalem about Israel's preparations for dealing with the Hamas tunnel network. A lot of questions are trying to be answered at this point. Were these tunnels dug by hand largely, based on the descriptions you gave? It sounds like it.
Yeah, they were largely dug by hand. Yeah, I mean, there was no heavy machinery that was used to dig these tunnels. But, I mean, you should keep in mind that a lot of materials going in and out of Gaza are subject to scrutiny. So if you've got huge levels of cement going in, a large part of it is being used to create sophisticated tunnel networks that can cost between $1 and $10 million per tunnel.
Wow.
How did this actually happen without Israeli intelligence fully understanding what was going on?
All right, thanks, Rory. Wall Street Journal reporter Rory Jones with us this morning from Jerusalem. 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is here. She has America's first news.
Good morning. Protesters took to the streets in suburban St. Louis after an unarmed 18-year-old was shot and killed by police.
There's been some looting to a convenience store, a Quick Trip, which is a gas station convenience store, as well as several police cars from different agencies have been damaged.
Officer Brian Shellman is with St. Louis County Police. The shooting death of African-American Michael Brown brought cries of alleged police brutality and racism. Authorities are investigating the death of a race car driver struck by champion NASCAR driver Tony Stewart Saturday night at a dirt track in upstate New York. Stewart's car struck driver Kevin Ward Jr., who had exited his own car and was walking on the track. Islamist extremists who've overrun large areas of Iraq made a rare retreat in an area hit by U.S. airstrikes, gave up some territory taken from Kurdish forces. In Iran, a regional passenger plane crashed while taking off from Tehran yesterday, killing 39 people and injuring 9 on board that plane. That's according to a senior official and state media there. Here in the U.S., the FAA is investigating after a New York-bound JetBlue plane aborted takeoff from San Juan, Puerto Rico. An engine caught fire following a bird strike. Pilots evacuated the plane using the emergency slides. 3 passengers suffered minor injuries. Our gas prices continued to decline. The Lundberg survey shows prices down 6 cents in the past couple of weeks to an average of $3.52 a gallon for regular. That extends a price decline to 7 weeks now. Stock futures look pretty healthy this morning after Asian markets moved higher today. This week, we get an update on retail sales.
Job growth has been reasonably strong and consumer confidence coming back, consumer credit coming back. So I've got retail sales about 0.4%.
Comerica's Robert Dye. Well, at least 2 million people have already seen The Expendables 3. The problem with that for distributor Lionsgate is that the big budget action movie is not slated to open until Friday. An almost pristine version of the film leaked online. A Lionsgate executive said that a digital copy was stolen, did not elaborate.
How does that happen?
You know, a Carnegie Mellon University study, Gordon, found that the box office receipts can go down 19%. When a movie like this gets leaked online ahead of time.
Geez.
So there's a lawsuit filed against the websites that have been showing the pirated version. Mm. I had to laugh when I was thinking about The Expendables, though. My husband and I watched one of these movies.
Yeah.
And from the very opening seconds, it's just one massively violent scene after another. I mean, it's almost exhausting to watch it.
Explosions on top of
absolutely
explosions.
Continues all right. The way to the end.
23 minutes after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Time now for an automotive update, and it's brought to you by AutoTrader.com. With AutoTrader alerts, they'll let you know when the price drops on a car you've been searching for. They'll even send you cars that match what you're looking for. Sign up for text alerts at AutoTrader.com. Federal investigations into vehicles with suspected safety problems routinely take longer than they're supposed to. Automakers and regulators both contribute to the delays. And as a result, it can take years to get those cars and trucks off the road. Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Spector has an in-depth look at how recalled cars are able to stay on the road for so long without getting fixed. Mike, what have you found?
Well, basically, you have kind of a failed system here between the regulators and the automakers. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which is the U.S.'s top auto safety regulator, they police automobiles, look for safety defects, and often try to get automakers to recall vehicles. And they'll investigate automakers. And sometimes, if it involves a large number of vehicles, automakers will push back at every turn. It'll be mounds of paperwork. They'll ask for more time. They'll resist suggestions that their vehicles have problems to try to avoid the expense of a recall. And it's a lack of certain powers to try and force the automaker's hands, and they're generally understaffed and unable sometimes to systematically track things with the current systems they have in place and get things done in an expedient manner.
All right, so does the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration have the authority to say, okay, Company X, issue that recall and do it now? Or can they only strongly suggest?
Yes and no. NHTSA, as you mentioned, has the authority to order a recall if they find a determination of a safety defect in a vehicle or a certain model. However, automakers can challenge that order in court, and NHTSA generally does not have the authority to stop automakers from selling vehicles with suspected safety problems while that order is being challenged. And this involves, there's a multi-step process that even before you get to NHTSA making that defect determination and then ordering a recall.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Spector about why recalled cars manage to stay on the road, often for a long time. This can be a huge reputational risk for car makers here to not issue a recall, right? Especially if there's something strongly safety-related.
It's kind of a double-edged sword in a way. You're right. It is a risk if they drag things out and don't issue a recall. On the other hand, if they really don't think there's anything wrong with the vehicle and they think NHTSA might, you know, for lack of a better term, go away at some point, it's better oftentimes for the automaker to resist and hope investigation doesn't lead anywhere, because actually launching the recall itself is a very publicized event.
Thanks, Mike. Wall Street Journal reporter Mike Spector. 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal This Morning.
Your Buick certified service technicians would like you to think about something. And no, it has nothing to do with oil levels or brake pads or tire wear. They'd like you to think about the view from the window of the bed and breakfast you'll be visiting this weekend, or the crust on the beef Wellington you plan to make at your cooking class tomorrow. As the experts in Buick maintenance, they'd like you to think about the lyrics of the new song you just discovered on your drive to work, or the sunset you plan to enjoy on the ride home. The Buick Certified Service Experts would like you to think about anything but the maintenance of your Buick. That's their job. If you don't know worry-free service, you don't know Buick Certified Service. And now, experience it for yourself. Get a 5-quart Dexo synthetic blend oil change, 4-tire rotation, and 27-point inspection for $39.95 or less. Excludes full synthetic oil, tire balancing tax, and more than 5 quarts of oil extra. Most V6 and V8 engines and other select vehicles require more than 5 quarts of oil. Visit BuickCertifiedService.com for details and to find a participating dealer.
Wake up to the Wall Street Journal This Morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
Thanks for being with us on this Monday, August 11th. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. And coming up this half hour, the U.S. helps the Kurds push back terrorists in northern Iraq. Another 3-day ceasefire has begun in Gaza. Heightened tensions outside St. Louis. And on a lighter note, fine art students getting lessons in entrepreneurship. We'll have that report in about 20 minutes. President Obama's decision to launch military strikes in Iraq carries a lot of political risk.
It would be, I think, a big mistake for us to think that we can, on the cheap, simply go in, tamp everything down again, restart, without some fundamental shift in attitudes among the various Iraqi factions.
He's now exposed to criticism from both the right and the left at a time when his job approval ratings are at all-time lows. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Siobhan Hughes in D.C. Siobhan, who's saying what?
He's got opposition on both sides, coming from both the left and from the right. On the left, the big concern is that Mr. Obama is about to engage in an open-ended military action in a country that the U.S. only just got done exiting militarily. On the right, there are complaints, A, that Mr. Obama is not doing enough, and B, that he hasn't even bothered to put together a coherent policy to deal with what's happening in Iraq right now in terms of the advances made by the Islamic State. So he's getting it from both sides.
Are there a lot of Democrats who are opposing what he's doing, or is there kind of down the middle?
You know, it's really interesting. Democrats have embraced Mr. Obama's initial move. They say humanitarian aid is the right thing. And notably, nobody is coming out and saying, boy, he needed to get congressional approval first. But it's a very reluctant endorsement. And what you are increasingly starting to see is more and more Democrats getting very wary about mission creep, about where this is going to head. And there's a reasonable chance that those concerns are going to get louder, especially if these targeted strikes start to morph into some type of broader mission that go beyond just defending American personnel and facilities.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Siobhan Hughes. I'd imagine that this could be hard for some Democrats to accept because they view President Obama winding down the war in Iraq as one of his biggest accomplishments.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. This is a legacy item for Mr. Obama, that he has gotten the country out of two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that's the question. What does that say about his legacy, about his commitment to the American people, if he's doing the opposite of what people had expected him to do? So that is certainly a piece of it. Senator Elizabeth Warren, who is very popular on the left, very popular with the liberal wing of the base, came out and said she was concerned about unintended consequences. And that tells you a lot about what you need to know in terms of how the Democratic base feels. And the answer is not happy and very wary of any further engagement overseas.
Could the president alter his policy because of all the criticism?
Not right now. And, you know, part of it is that he seems to be walking such a narrow line here. He himself laid out a pretty narrow mission. For one thing, this is confined to Iraq. It doesn't deal with other nations where the Islamic State is also a factor. For another, Mr. Obama framed his decision in large part into terms of defending American personnel and American facilities. And so he himself is really trying to draw a line about around what he is doing right now. Of course, the problem is if that changes, if that expands.
Thanks, Siobhan. Wall Street Journal reporter Siobhan Hughes. 21 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. This portion of the program is brought to you by Experian.com. When it comes to getting the things you want in life, your credit score can make the difference. But when it comes to understanding your credit, not all websites are equal. With Experian Credit Tracker, you get a real credit report and real people standing by to answer your questions, including a dedicated fraud resolution agent if you fall victim to ID theft. Go to Experian.com now for your credit report and score, and live credit confident from now on with enrollment in Experian Credit Tracker. It's 18 minutes now in front of the hour. The Wall Street Journal this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the stories we're following.
Gordon, a candlelight vigil last night for an unarmed black teen who was killed by police in Ferguson, Missouri over the weekend turned violent as protesters there blocked traffic, smashed windows, and looted stores. TV footage also showed people standing on police cars, vandalizing vehicles, and taunting officers clad in riot gear. Hillary Clinton is taking aim at the Obama administration for what she perceives was a lack of action in Syria that has led to the rise of Islamist militants in the region, like the ones currently being targeted by the U.S. airstrikes. Gina will have more on all of today's top stories with America's First News coming up. Not a fun day at the park yesterday for two dozen people, including seven children who were rescued from a roller coaster at a Six Flags amusement park in Maryland. A roller coaster there was stuck about 45 feet from the ground. And Gordon, did Bryce Harper disrespect the A or not? The Braves and their fans certainly think the Washington Nationals slugger did just that. Cameras caught Mr. Harper multiple times on his way to home plate Saturday, appearing to take a swipe with his cleats at the drawn-in A behind home plate at Turner Field in Atlanta. Braves fans have been booing him heavily throughout the game, and this was thought to be his passive-aggressive way of retaliating. Harper denied he did anything wrong. The Braves' official Twitter account tweeted simply, #respect the A.
That's funny.
Now, you know what I hate is when, I mean, it's obvious that he did it.
Oh, yeah.
And it's because he did it multiple times.
Right. He didn't just appear to do it. He did it.
Right. I mean, you know, he either did it or he just has a foot spasm that happens every time he walks to home plate. But, I mean, just admit that you did it. You know, just, I hate it when athletes do these types of things, or, you know, pitchers who throw at guys during games or whatever. Yeah. I hate when they don't admit it. Just admit that you did it. And I feel like that's more of a manly thing to do, I think. Just
right.
the sort of hiding, oh no, I didn't do it.
Just say, right, listen, it's a little gamesmanship.
Yeah.
It's not illegal. Yes, I'm trying to get under their skin. Yes, yeah. We have a rivalry. It's a close race here.
Especially for this thing. You know, he can't get – if a pitcher throws at somebody, they could probably get in some trouble. But in this particular case, for swiping your foot across the A,
right.
Just admit that you did it. You know, I think a lot of people would respect you more for that.
I think otherwise,
they look at him kind of just as sort of a punk kid now. You
right.
know, because he won't admit his mistakes.
I think that's a good point. Here's something for the Braves to consider. You're 3.5 back of the Nationals. How about responding with winning some games?
Yeah, well, they've had some problems doing that lately, too, which I think is part of the problem. It's all starting to boil over here a little bit.
Right. Maybe this is just the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah, yeah.
There are other issues in Atlanta. All right. Thank you, Mike. 15 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Time now for a travel update, and it's brought to you by Lexington Hotels. Whether you're traveling for business or leisure, choose Lexington Inns and Hotels for exceptional service, great rates, and a personal touch. Visit LexingtonHotels.com. Do you have any interest in visiting places like Syria, Chechnya, or even Iraq? Not the places that top most people's vacation list, right? But these are must-see locations for people known as war tourists. Yahoo News says on the Syrian-Israeli border, tour groups who have just visited the area's wineries also got a view of the ongoing Syrian civil war. The Daily Beast documented 3 college students' questionable decision to cross the border into Syria last year to see the war up close. And while technically not tourists, even locals in Israel lined up last month to watch the air assault on Gaza, according to Australia's news.com. Yahoo News says plenty of thrill seekers are game, and tour companies are open for business with names like Wild Frontiers. Another tour company called Warzone Tours. They offer small group trips to offbeat places like Afghanistan, Iraq, and Pakistan. The adventure travel category, by the way, has grown 65% since 2009, at least according to a study last year from the Adventure Travel Trade Association, with a potential global market of $263 billion. It's 10 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is back. She has America's first news.
Good morning. A fresh 72-hour ceasefire in the month-long Gaza conflict took effect today, but Israeli and Palestinian negotiators still face daunting challenges in reaching a longer-term agreement to prolong the calm. U.S. officials say they're exploring options to evacuate thousands of Iraqi civilians trapped on a mountain in northern Iraq by Islamic militants. This after 4 nights of humanitarian relief airdrops. U.S.-based Hess has suspended oil drilling operations in Iraqi Kurdistan, also started to evacuate its non-essential staff amid violence in the region. Stock futures look pretty strong this morning after Asian markets closed higher. London shares have been moving up as well. This week here in the U.S., we get updates on retail sales, jobless claims, and wholesale prices. Comerica's Robert Dye says those prices have likely moved up.
Not too hot, but definitely warmer than it was a year or so ago. Inflation indicators getting back into that middle of the so-called Fed comfort zone, and we might start bumping above that getting into the second half of the year.
Disney's the latest to feel Amazon's sting as the online retail giant refuses to accept pre-orders for Disney disc titles, including Captain America: The Winter Soldier. This is the same tactic Amazon used in its spat with Hachette over ebook pricing, which is ongoing. A lawsuit filed against Chinese internet company Alibaba and then withdrawn provides details about allegedly counterfeit goods on Alibaba's shopping pages. The complaint from Gucci and other brands alleged that Alibaba's platforms knowingly made it possible for counterfeiters to sell fakes in the U.S. McDonald's Japan is banning smoking in all of its restaurants there. There are around 3,100 McDonald's there, and some had permitted smoking until now. It's common for U.S. restaurants to ban smoking, right? But it's not so much common in Japan. Well, thankfully, a 9-year-old Florida boy is okay, but he suffered cuts after fighting off a 400-pound alligator. James Barney Jr. was swimming in a lake when he felt something chomp down on his foot. The 9-foot-long gator left a tooth in one of his legs, plans to wear it around his neck as a necklace.
400 pounds?
That's an incredible story. Wow. I'm so glad he's okay. Poor little thing.
How does this kid ever go back in a lake?
Oh, I know.
Right?
I mean, I was thinking about that. It's any place there's water in Florida, Gordon?
Right.
Lakes?
Mm-hmm.
You got to watch out for the alligators because they're out there. I was on a golf course once in Florida, and there were two sunning themselves.
Yeah, another good example. They do it right by my parents' house in South Carolina, too, right on the golf course watering hole.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of the landscape.
8 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. Good Monday morning. Recognizing the tough job market that their graduates face, fine arts schools are now equipping students with skills in entrepreneurship and business. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Adam Rubenfire. Adam, explain the trend.
You know, a lot of music, design, and art schools are all saying our industry is changing. We need to do something to prepare our students for these new changing industries that, you know, our graduates end up going into. And so, particularly in music schools, there's been a recent push for this kind of thing. So the Juilliard School, the Berklee College of Music in Boston, and the San Francisco Conservatory of Music have all recently added programs or courses to help students kind of broaden the careers that they could go into after graduation. And then talking about art and design, the Rhode Island School of Design, the Otis College of Art and Design in Los Angeles, and the Pratt Institute here in New York have taken steps to add courses and programming in the last decade.
Oh, wow. I would imagine that the job market is not great right now for those with arts degrees.
It's still possible to get a job in a classical, working for an orchestra or playing gigs. It is possible. But, you know, what one student told me, he's a doctoral student at the New England Conservatory of Music in Boston. He said, you know, it becomes less about one single stream of income. You know, he wants to make his career about doing things he loves. And I think what I'm hearing is it's both a curse and a blessing.
Okay.
There's definitely not as many jobs out there, maybe, but there's also this new entrepreneurial spirit, and you can do things with your music skills or your art skills that allow you to make a name for yourself.
Got it. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Adam Rubenfire. He's got a story about art schools now starting to teach some business skills. So what kinds of courses are available at some of these schools?
So at the music schools, for example, the San Francisco Conservatory of Music is building a music technology facility, and they're adding some courses in music technology, in composition and other skills in that sense. And then there's a battery of professional development courses that they'll add by next year in how to write a press release, reading financial statements, using crowdfunding websites like Kickstarter, and those kind of things.
Thanks, Adam. Wall Street Journal reporter Adam Rubenfire. He writes that the Berklee College of Music has begun holding YouTube Hack Days, bringing students together with artists that are popular on YouTube, including some Berklee alums. During the most recent Hack Day in March, he says students made their own performance videos in under 24 hours and learned about the factors that go into a video's viral success. That'll do it for this hour. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning. In any business, it's important to maximize your potential, and strong communication and collaboration are key. This allows you to close deals faster, problem solve better, and create new opportunities. That's why you need Citrix GoToMeeting. It's the best, most efficient way to meet with clients and customers from the convenience of your computer, smartphone, or tablet. With GoToMeeting, you can meet online as often as you like with anyone, anywhere in the world. You can share screens to review documents and presentations together in real time, all while using the built-in HD video conferencing feature to see each other face-to-face. It's just like being in the same room, even when you're miles apart. GoToMeeting allows you to cut out the wasted time and expense of travel so you can be more productive without losing that personal touch of meeting in person. Try GoToMeeting for free today to see what it can do for you. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free for 30 Days button, and use the promo code WSJ. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code WSJ.